All right. Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show. Garrett Lell and Matt Dahl. Matt, good to talk to you again, brother. Thank you for your time, man.
How you doing?
Oh, man, just living the dream.
Been a good couple of weeks.
Been a great couple of weeks. Market just continues to just tear right on. What are we, about 6-7% up for the year right now? Is that about right?
S&P, as of close of last night, is up 7.11% total return year to date. So can't complain about that. I mean, here we are 2 months in. It's basically 7%. I mean, the market, you know, usually averages a little bit less than 1% a month normally.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like we talked about earlier. I mean, I'm looking at it today. We're sitting at almost 5130. I checked the something called a Keltner channel, right? It's just kind of it basically measures the general momentum and where the market kind of a top, where the top of the market should be, where the bottom of the market should be within a channel inside of a given trend, whether it's up or down, right? And it's
what
measured,
was it called again?
It's called a Keltner channel. It's called a Keltner channel.
Okay? Keltner channel. That's a new one. I hadn't heard of that one.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Once in a great while, they'll go outside of the channel. They'll actually blow through the channel. Okay, and it's a measure of momentum, and that's how the channel is built, right? But when it drops below the lower support level of the channel, it's a great time to buy. It really is. Okay.
How does that compare?
We blew through the upper portion of the channel in late January, and we're still above it. So this would be, I mean, don't get me wrong, we are still, you know, bullish. We think everything looks really, really good in the intermediate term future into the year, into next year, all those things. Nothing has changed. That being said, the market has moved a lot the last 2 months, more than I thought it would. It doesn't mean it's not a time to sell. I'm not, you know, we're long-term investors. We believe in doing the math and the work and building positions for 12, 24, 36, 48 months out. But we're not necessarily putting new money to work right here. Okay. We think there could be probably, and a lot of this, you know, from Newton over at Fundstrat, he brought this up, and I tend to agree with him. And if I don't agree with him, I tend to listen to what he has to say, and then I agree with him because he's really good at what he does. I would think there would be, I thought there was going to be a consolidation starting toward the middle end of February. It looks like it's going to be pushed out a little bit. A lot of it having to do with just this momentum that was created from the tech side, specifically from NVIDIA. And that we might not get that consolidation really till middle of March. And that middle of March timeframe could be the catalyst for that, could be the CPI report that comes out on March 12th. Okay. So, you know, we had a pretty hot CPI. We had a hot PCE, which is, you know, they're siblings. Hot January CPI, hot January PCE that was released, you know, here in the month of February. And we're going to get February CPI on March 12th. Okay. So, you know, we talked about, we see companies that do a lot of price increases in January. So the seasonal adjustments that we get in January usually aren't that great. And that's why we typically see kind of those inflationary month over month spikes in January, because it's a year over year. And that's when companies raise prices. We typically, when we get a hot CPI in January, it's also followed by a hot February CPI. This time it's a little different in that I don't think the market would be pricing in a hot February CPI. Okay. Because inflation has been cooling off so rapidly for effectively the last almost year now, right? And it's where things are really starting to normalize. So we kind of look at January as an anomaly. If it's supported again in February with another month, hot month over month core CPI and hot month over month core PCE, that's going to be difficult again. And then we go back to the bad girlfriend, good girlfriend. Okay.
I was just going to add.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go, right? So then we're going to get back to the bond market's going to be in control. Doesn't matter how good NVIDIA is doing or how good the tech sector is doing or how good earnings are doing. They're doing great. I mean, look at NVIDIA. You know, I mean, $5.16 a share on 459 consensus. It beat a massive guidance number that it gave in November. It blew that off by 12.5%. No matter how strong those earnings are, it's not going to matter if CPI comes in much hotter than consensus. Consensus being 0.3%. So if we get, which is still not great, okay, the market can probably live with 0.3, okay, being that the 10-year sitting at 4.2. So we have a little bit of room there. But if the market comes in at 0.4 again, well, now we're at almost 5% annualized rate again for the second month in a row, which now says that inflation is higher, is hotter than the benchmark 10-year treasury note. And I think you're going to see the 10-year turn around, reverse course, and go right back to 450. And if it does that, my guess is we would probably see a pretty quick correction of 5 to 7%. That would be my guess.
We've talked a lot in the last several weeks, NVIDIA driving the market, and then we had a huge number, and NVIDIA's up about 23% since our last conversation.
It's up 65.2% this year.
This year?
This year. It's our biggest core position. And again, we have happy clients and we have a happy Matt.
did it start as your biggest position or become it? Because that's one of those moves that it can become your biggest position.
We made it a 7% position in our portfolio end of last year.
Yeah. Oh, wow. On the last show, we talked about, in fact, we titled it The Data-Driven Economy. And you made a point that NVIDIA was so important right now because it's an AI-driven market. That is really what's driving the market. We like to see breadth. We like to see not just one, you know, for example, if tech's up 50% and everything else is flat, that may average out in the index to say we're up 10%. But we'd much rather see 15 or, you know, 8 or 9 different sectors up 10% sort of around that than maybe just one carrying the entire load. So it's kind of like a football team, right? You want a balanced offense. You want a little bit of contribution from several different players.
I mean, you look at the RSP, which is the equal weight S&P 500. So these are all the companies in the S&P 500 with the exact same effect on that indice.
In the equally weighted index, we're going to take $100. We're going to divide it up over 500 different companies. And what does that come out to? 20 cents a pop. That's what you're getting, you know, 20 cents right for every $100 in each of the 500.
Right. I mean, if you look at right now, the single biggest weighting in the S&P 500 is Microsoft at 7.12%. Okay. Well, let's go from there. Let's go down to Costco. It's a great company. Costco is a monster, right? It represents 0.78%. 0.78%. That's it. And Costco is the number 20 holding. It's the 20th largest holding in the entire S&P 500. So that means there's 479 companies smaller as far as market cap than Costco. And it represents 0.78. So you can see, basically, you look at Microsoft, it has 10 times the effect on the S&P 500 or thereabouts, about 9 times the effect as Costco on the S&P 500, through like a normal S&P 500 index fund like the SPY or the VU, right? Versus an RSP, which is equal weight. If, in theory, if Costco goes down 1% and Microsoft goes up 1%, it's a zero, it's a wash on the RSP side. Whereas if Microsoft goes down 1% and Costco goes up 1%, the indice would effectively go down 0.8%. Do you see what I'm saying? Because yep. Microsoft has such a bigger weighting, actually 0.9% has such a bigger weighting than Costco does. So the reason I like looking at the RSP or the S&P equal weight indice itself, it's the same thing, is it lets me know, is it just a few of the companies up top, again, your Microsoft, your Apples, your NVIDIA's, your Amazon's, your Meta's, your Google's, those companies, are they keeping the market high when the underpinnings of the market, the other 480, the other 490 of them, those are deteriorating. I mean, if you look at the top 20 holdings of the S&P 500, just the top 20, that makes, you know, you're talking 42.2% of the S&P 500 as far as market cap. So just those 20 companies alone can move the market tremendously. So what you don't see is you don't see the smaller companies, because they're the ones that need access to credit. They're the ones that are going to be more affected if there's a slowdown in the economy, if there's a slowdown in demand, right? The larger companies with tremendous amounts of war chests, they don't necessarily have to go to the capital markets as much as the smaller companies. So if they start to deteriorate, and then if you go down the line even further than that, there's a there's a ETF called Equal, right? EQAL. That's the S&P, I'm sorry, that's the Russell 1000 index, which represents small and mid caps too. Okay. And that actually is even a little bit more sensitive there. So you really start to see, is there deterioration happening in the small and the mid caps and those smaller large cap companies? If we start to lose that, you won't see necessarily the S&P 500 contract all that much. If again, the big tech companies are doing well because there's so much demand for their products and services, but the rest of the market, a larger portion of the market, as far as companies are not doing well. And that lets me know the economy maybe isn't as strong as people think it is. That being said, the RSP, the equal weight, has just hit an all-time high on both a weekly and a monthly basis. All right. So again, back to, we have a good economy. You know, if we didn't, we would see that those equal weight indices really start to deteriorate, because they, not all the time, but typically we see those move a little earlier. We see them move a little sooner than your market cap weighted.
Well, and to drive this just a little bit harder home or further home, the top five companies make up about 24% of the S&P 500. So in other words, put another way, 1% of the names make up 24% of the index. So if you buy the S&P 500, 24% of your investment is being bet on 1% of the companies. Now, that can be good or bad depending on those companies. But again, to your point, which you just made, what you discussed about NVIDIA, as NVIDIA grows, it becomes a bigger part of the index, and now you're getting more and more on that. So it's a different, a lot of times people don't realize that fact of it, right? Like the S&P 500 is, half of it comes from the top 4% and 25% of it comes from the top 1%. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And I'm not saying don't invest in the index. I'm just saying that's a fact that a lot of people don't realize how top heavy those indexes can be, and how much the top performing companies doing well exaggerates that fact.
Exactly. Exactly. And back to, you know, because we love to pick on people in the media.
You know, that's one of our favorite things to do. That's what we do. That's kind of our
purpose. That's what we do, right? Like we throw darts at them and then point and laugh. That's what we do. Here's these companies. They've done tremendously well. They're great companies with amazing products, incredibly smart people, and that's why they are where they're at. So when you see a lot of people that go on TV or print media and they downplay investing, well, I wouldn't put any money in there. You know, they're the S&P is too top heavy and tech's carrying the whole load and da 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 da. Well, okay. Let's run down that rabbit hole of logic, okay? As a portfolio manager,
I can already tell this is going to be fun. Go ahead.
The other portfolio manager. So you're not going to buy these companies. You're not going to allocate, and you're going to be underweight these companies because you think the market is too top heavy, and you don't agree with it. Well, to your point, 1% makes up 25% of the market. So if you're not allocating money there, at least 25%, okay, then guess what's happening? You're not following the indice, okay? And you're risking, you're basically telling the entire world that you're wrong and I'm right and I'm going to outperform the market with my great ideas and information that everybody already has. I'm going
to
think about it.
Yeah, but welcome to human nature, right? I mean, isn't that what we all think we can do, is outsmart everybody else?
Right. You have to understand that effectively is the indice. So you run a massive risk, a huge risk, probably I would say a 4-to-1 risk based on simple percentages of underperforming the market if you don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think to a lot of folks' credit, a lot of, you know, institutions' credit and smaller portfolio managers like myself, is we realize that, and at the end of the day, We want to do our best to provide our clients as much alpha as we can with the least amount of risk possible.
We touched a little bit on CPI. We've got another CPI report coming out before we talk again on March 12th. What are you looking for on that? I know we talked about it a little bit before, but that we've kind of talked about the January, the February, and that March is important. But what are you looking for in March? What is the market looking for? What are you looking for from that?
Well, I'm looking for two things right now. So obviously, I believe Tuesday is Super Tuesday, election season. So we're getting into that kind of world where the politics start to do their best to knock on the door of the markets. Okay, so there's going to be a lot of the world's coming to an end, the world's coming to an end, the world's coming to an end happening. And we actually saw that this morning in UMich. The UMich consumer sentiment report came in kind of light, like 76.9. I think consensus was 79.2. Okay. So consumer confidence came in a little bit light, which we tend to see in election seasons, right? Okay. We see, oh, things are going terribly. We hope the other guy wins, blah, 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 blah. So we have sort of a little bit of a headwind coming in with consumer confidence because there's a lot more communication that's happening now to the general public as far as the economy and consumerism and all those other things, because of course, one side is going to talk the other side down. So we have that. You couple that, if inflation's specifically the number that comes out on March 12th, the 0.3, the consensus of 0.3, if it comes out much hotter than that, and I mean 0.35, I think the bond market's going to throw a fit and it's going to pull the equity markets back pretty quick. But I don't think it's going to stay there all that long. There is an absolute buy the dip mentality right now. Okay. We went from all of 2022 and early 2023 sell the rip. Now it's buy the dip. Okay. Because earnings are strong. Earnings are coming in strong. I think earnings this quarter are going to be close to $56 a share, whereas consensus was $53.12. So we should nail our number, which is right about $222 a share S&P for 2023. We'll have those final numbers here just in a couple of weeks. So earnings are strong. If inflation gets a little hotter than the market's pricing it in and the bond market sells off, that's going to be a problem for equity markets. And usually we get a little jumpiness in the March, April timeframe. It's kind of usually February is a bad month and then flex goes the other way in March. But, you know, if you look at 2022, we had that nice little run up into March and then it just kind of dove off into April, which happens too. So, you know, there's some seasonality factors that are coming into play right now. April is typically one of the better months. In fact, I think it's historically the best month. It's actually better than December typically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that might work out this year. It might not. I mean, there's always the Santa Claus rally that didn't show up this year. So a lot of these are supposed to happen, but if it doesn't happen, you know, we'll go ahead and scream up at the sky and see how that works, because it ain't going to happen. So, you know, as long as we don't, I think there's some good tailwinds still. Consumer credit is getting a little high. We're starting to see some stress there. But again, back to our old friend labor. Labor's fine. Labor's strong. We still have a lot of job openings. Okay. JOLTS is strong. JOLTS is nearly 9 million. Okay. Job openings are nearly 9 million. We're still creating, lots of, jobs comes out next Friday. I think that number should be 200,000. Okay. Last month it was 353,000. So I'll be really anxious to see where we land in terms of consensus of 200,000 and where February is revised to. Is it revised up or if it's revised down? So we're going to see the first shots across the bow for March on March 8th, next Friday, when we get the unemployment rate and non-farm payrolls and February revisions. And then obviously the following week we get CPI. So if we get numbers hot on jobs and hot job revisions, and that pops yields a little bit, the bond market is going to get real trigger happy. Okay. And if it's supported with a hot February CPI, I think you're going to see the wheels come off probably for two to four weeks, you know. And my guess is it would probably be somewhere to a 5-7% correction. Anything could happen. It might not move at all. It might just have a couple days of indigestion, go 2-3%, and then that'll be the end of it. Or it could be a consolidation period where, you know, we have a trough somewhere in the 5-6% range. Or we could have more data come out that's bad, or an exogenous event could happen. Anything can happen. But, you know, those are the things that are kind of in the forefront and I think are the closest to market moving. But, you know, and to be fair, I don't think I would necessarily mind a little bit of a cooling off of this market and letting it kind of come back into the Keltner channel, right? Letting it come back into the channel. It's just, I'm not saying it's overbought. If you look at the DeMar counts, it's not really showing any signs of exhaustion or anything like that, but it just feels like it's a little stretched to me. Okay. We're 4% away from our year-end target. So, and we've got 10 months to go. Doesn't mean we're right, But I would like to see clients. And when the money came in here, it was, you know, what was that? 2% ago, 3% ago, we were 7% from our year end target. Not that we're certainly going to do our level best to outperform the market for sure. But we want to do our best to make sure we're giving the clients the best shot that they can at a full year return of the market. If we're doing that when the market's already up, you know, not that we're trying to time the market like that. It just, we're looking at it more from a price perspective, not a time perspective. Okay. Like I would like to see the market fall back at least into the Keltner channel somewhere. See how it faces some bad news. I will say it did, you know, we talked about this last show. There was how resilient the market is. I mean, it got a gnarly jobs report and a gnarly CPI report right next to each other. Okay. I mean, hot jobs, hot CPI, a couple days, and it was out. You know, we'll have to see what happens in March, but I think the market is pricing in a lot of good news in March. And if something wiggles the wrong way, I think the bond market could fall right back into control. The 10-year could go through 435, right up to 450. That's going to make the market, you know, a bit choppy.
Well, the cool thing so far since we started doing this show is that you've been pretty doggone right about most of the things you've said. And if anything, you might have been too right. The things that you've said are going to happen have happened maybe a little bit sooner than you expected. But, you know, at the end of the day, look, there's not an ABC of, okay, do this, do this, do this, and you'll never lose money and you'll always do this. You'll always be successful. If the facts change tomorrow, you're nimble enough to change along with them, right? Like you don't just stay married to one conviction and never change it.
Well, market timing doesn't work. Never has and never will. Okay. I don't, and that's not what we would try to do here. We're not trying to time the market. What we're looking at is the return at the end of the year, where we're at now and thinking, well, it feels pretty stretched at this time of the year. So I would like to see the market at least get back into a more normal range before I would allocate, whether that happens at 5,000 on the S&P, at 4,750 on the S&P or whatever. I would like to see the market be back into its channel.
Well, and I think you just said one word right there. It feels. A true seasoned professional investor has that seat of your pants feel that you develop over time. You can't learn it in a textbook. Nobody can teach it to you. It's just an instinct that you develop from years and years of repetition. And I think that's maybe a shorter, more condensed way of saying what I was trying to say there. We can't give you a science that's always going to work. There's always going to be that art side of it. And that's what you're paid to do. Is to have you're paid for that seat of your pants feeling, intuition, instinct that you've developed over a 20-year career doing this.
You know, it's just you have to get it wrong enough times to get it right enough times to learn, right? The best lessons I ever learned is when I did it wrong.
All right, brother. Well, thanks for your time, man. As always, see you in 2 weeks.
All right, my friend. Talk to you
later, man.